There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. Steve Faulb has been fired for insubordination. This is podcast number 584, June 22nd, 2012. Nasser?
Thank you, sir, and welcome to F1 Weekly. This edition of your podcast is brought to you by Trader Joe's Black Mango Tea. That's what we are having here today.
On today's program, Alonso and Vettel to become chum buddies. Schumacher tipped to be our eighth winner. Valencia could change everything towards the season end. And of course, we've got Motorsports Mondial from the King of Karachi himself, Nasser Hamid, and we'll be talking about 24 Heures du Mans. Nasser, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Thank you, sir. Good to be here. And I hope you give second consideration and rehire Mr. Faulb. It's very hard to get high salaries out there in this day and age.
I understand, but insubordination is just not tolerated here at F1Weekly.com.
Yeah, well,
exactly. Anyway, quickly, before we begin this beautiful program, we do have a special weekend interview podcast number 585. I thought we'd chit-chat about that just briefly to get everybody on the edge of their seats.
Yes, sir. This will be with Mr. Leo Hendry, who is the CEO and co-promoter of the Grand Prix coming to New York, New Jersey, and his story is a great American success story, and we shall talk more on this on Sunday's program.
Thank you, Nas. Okay, let's get to it. Valencia, this weekend, we've got some Formula One racing. Are you ready?
Si, senor, and this is the third consecutive race in the streets of a city, from Monte Carlo to Montreal to Viva España. I'm looking forward to it.
No, it should be good. Now, some people have critiqued Valencia as some of the camera angles can be quite ugly, but a little industrial.
No, it should be called the On the Waterfront Grand Prix.
It is on the waterfront. It is industrial. But still, it's a beautiful part of España. Valencia is a nice town. And I love Valencia, and I think this is going to be a great race. A similar race, a setup to Monaco and Canada. It's sort of perfect to come in after Canada because it's a street race again.
Yes, sir, and it should be a good race, thanks not so much to the tight confines of the track. It still has pretty decent speed, but, you know, the way the tire lottery, as they are calling it, that should make it for an exciting race. And I'm surprised how people are already saying it's going to be a Michael Schumacher. Which will be great, but not so fast, I say.
Yeah, I think Ross Brawn is probably going, hold your horses, because they still have a lot of work to do, especially when Michael's DRS got stuck open in Canada and he couldn't finish the race.
Well, it'll be great if he wins, and you know, it will be, the streak will continue at 8, but I just have a feeling that it will be a repeat winner for the first time this year.
It could be, because the numbers are stacking up, and it would be really hard to get an eighth different winner. I mean, that would be unbelievable. I mean, that would mean that a lot of teams are doing a lot of work in the right direction.
Absolutely.
So it's impressive. Now let's do a little history here. In 2008, Felipe Massa had pole position.
Okay.
In 2009, Lewis Hamilton had pole position.
Okay.
2010, Sebastian Vettel had pole position. And in 2011, Sebastian Vettel, Red Bull, had pole position again. And out of all those, all of them went to win except for Lewis Hamilton. Pole is extremely critical here in Valencia.
Well, any street race. And again, you know, with this tire situation, you just don't know. But I would be surprised if Lewis or Sebastian are not on front row.
It's definitely going to be a big race. Lewis Hamilton, pretty pumped up. He obviously puts in hot qualifying laps. But Sebastian always has that little magic towards the end, which could be pretty exciting. But we have Fernando Alonso in the news and Sebastian Vettel in the news, and it's pretty exciting stuff. Dominic Cali did some interview, and I don't know why this is happening. Obviously, Felipe Massa is definitely out at the end of the season. But now there's talk about
Sebastian Vettel.
Thank you very much. And Fernando Alonso becoming chum buddies. They can work together because of their intellect and their love for each other and respect. Both fighting for the triple world champion, the youngest triple world champion, which would be unbelievable.
Yeah, it will be a great pairing, and I think sooner or later we will see Bastian at Ferrari. Last time they had a German driver, they were very successful at Ferrari. And on his case, Nando, to have Vettel as a teammate, it's worth a chance. It's worth a gamble. He's unknown quantity as a teammate. But, you know, sometimes they throw Lewis Hamilton's name at Ferrari. That is not going to happen as long as Nando there. And it should not happen. I mean, the guy should have learned his lesson by now if you go to a top team.
Well, not only that, but the driver's management would be fighting against anything like that.
Yeah, but you have to have it in writing. Otherwise, you know, Formula One can be as cold as a Westinghouse, you know, these industrial-sized trailers.
I agree.
Thermo King, as they call them.
Exactly. Dominic Cali says, I think they are both intelligent guys and they could easily coexist. Both Vettel and Alonso are fighting to become the youngest ever three-time champions. That wouldn't be a problem. Both drivers are always looking for a new challenge, and to be in the same team would be a new and huge challenge. They would both think they can bear the one of each other, as they are sure of themselves, and Stefano would do what was required to, so that they were treated equally. He says, it would be a case of doing what I did at Brabham in 1979. Now, I think this is Bernie Ecclestone talking. With Niki Lauda and Nelson Piquet. I told them, guys, it's simple. Whichever one of you is quickest is number one. Those are good rules.
Yeah.
But they just, I don't think they're going to work in a modern Ferrari with a Vettel and a Fernando.
I think it can work out now because now we have, you know, the stewards and a driver rep. So that, you know, if you do something even for blocking, you know, you get a drive-through penalty very quickly. So I think those days of crashing into drivers, you know, first saying he left me no room, then saying, you know, I did it on purpose. I think those days are gone. You can do this thing, but you'll be heavily penalized.
Yeah. It's not the Wild West anymore, is it?
No.
Yeah.
The Tombstone, Arizona is no longer hosting a Formula One race.
Absolutely. Now, another driver that really has to do well, and I think Fernando will do well in Valencia. He always does well in front of his people. Ferrari seems to be taking steps forward, and they could be quick this weekend. The other man that really needs to take care of business is Jenson Button. I don't know what's happened to him, but I think he finished, 14th in Canada, was languishing, almost got lapped by Lewis Hamilton, but then Hamilton pitted. What do you think's going on here?
I think he's having the season Lewis had
last year,
despite not having any marital problems or girlfriend problem, because Jessica is always there smiling. But, you know, these things happen, and he just has to... Well, you know, he endured many, many years of being in the doldrum with Honda, Bar, and whatever they were called in those days. So I think he's mature enough to see it through and come back fighting. It may not happen in this race, but I don't think he's going to play dead to Lewis Hamilton the rest of the season.
Well, McLaren has come out and said that they found the problem. It's a setup problem with Jensen's car, and they hope to have it resolved this weekend. McLaren says, I think Canada was a very interesting from a fundamental part. We run the same car for both drivers, and both have the same parts available. Although we allow them to adapt the setup to their driving style, clearly we had something fundamentally different in terms of the tire performance and car performance for Jenson Button's car. We hope to have that resolved this weekend. Apparently, Jenson Button's setup is a disaster. And what I would think is if he thinks he has a problem with that setup, sometimes drivers in the past used to go, okay, you know what, Hamilton's setup looks pretty good. Let's just go ahead and put that on my car and I'll deal with it. But that doesn't seem to be the case. You think it's because of the ego? I can't go with another driver's setup? Or,
well, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, I'm not much of a technical guy to talk on this. It's like Michael Schumacher, you know, in reading Alex Zanardi's book, that, you know, the setup he uses is just, it's not comfortable for every, for most of the drivers, but it works out very well for Mr. Michael Schumacher. And, you know, Hamilton is a very aggressive driver, so maybe his setup may not work for Jensen. But I will say this, you know, some years ago we did an interview at Le Mans with Jackie Eckelhart, who had worked with a lot of drivers, including Jensen Button, and he was very complimentary that Jensen Button's feedback is very, very impressive. So, you know, maybe they've run into a situation where they're trying a few things which is not working, but this is not a Ronnie Peterson situation where the guy is ultra quick but really very poor with their feedback. So I think this will be sorted out sooner or later.
It's going to have to be, because Jensen Button looked pretty sad at the Canadian Grand Prix. Excuse me, I have a frog in my throat. How appropriate.
A frog in a frog? So what, cannibalism going on here?
Exactly. Let's move on to the other driver that needs help. And he's your friend.
Kimi
Raikkonen.
Yeah, it looks like the shine is going off from that perky jerky.
Yeah, the perky jerky aftertaste is not lingering anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So we don't know what's going on. But the guy has to have a quick car. But, you know, he has been very exciting, and he's up there. So I would like to see him hang in there this year and be there next year also. You know, what I would really like to see is a team like Red Bull, or I don't think Ferrari will take him back. McLaren is already house full. But I would like to see him in a fast car, fast, reliable car.
Well, so far, the Lotus is looking pretty good in Grosjean's hands.
Yeah.
He was second in Canada. And Eric Boullier has certainly admitted that Kimi is still acclimating to F1, even though this is going to be the eighth race. He was gone for 2 years. Let's cut him some slack, even though he's showed some pace in a few other races. But on the other hand, he's getting out-qualified almost every race by Romain, who's a rookie.
Well, Romain Grosjean, I always thought, was a very good driver. You just don't win every championship you go into without being a good driver. And, you know, same with Nico Hülkenberg. So these people, if they got a little bit more time to gel. Romain has already stamped his authority that, you know, he is Formula One material now. So it looks like his seat in Formula One is secured. But it'll be interesting to see how it, you know, when we go to Monza, Spa, where Kimi has always done very well, how the table tight turns between Romain Grosjean and Kimi Raikkonen.
Well, I think we'll see some of that this weekend, because let's not forget, there are no super softs this weekend. This weekend, it's softs and medium. So we're going to have less tire degradation. And even though I thought Romain Grosjean, for a young Formula One driver, did a fantastic job in Canada managing those tires, good decision, less tire degradation, I think Kimi has a good chance of shining and possibly outshining Romain Grosjean this weekend. Eric Boullier says his team has no concerns about the performance of Raikkonen, even though the Finn has endured his fair share of frustrations on his return to Formula One. And he's had a lot of problems with the power steering, you know, similar to Jarno Trulli. And he's had some problems with picking correct differentials that suit him. Once again, like Jensen Button's setup issues. And apparently it looks like Romain is a little more flexible at acclimating to these kinds of problems and dealing with the situation. So, but everybody's behind Raikkonen at Lotus F1, so...
You know, who knows? Maybe Romain Grosjean listens more to the team engineers in terms of setup, and Kimi, being Kimi, probably wants to run his own show and subsequently paying the price.
Well, you know, I've read that Kimi is actually not too bad with technical input.
No, but I'm not saying I know he's good, because based on what we've heard from people who just has a different style.
That's
but,
true.
You know, if the guy insists that, you know, hey, I like this setup, I want to do it this way, which one can easily imagine that he is like that, then you're going to have a situation.
Right. Okay, Mark Webber came out and said what happens in 2012 is going to help him decide where he goes in 2013. Now, Christian Horner has often said that he's happy with Mark Webber's performance. He's He'd be happy to keep him for 2013. Of course, we've got that seat opening up at Ferrari. Mark Webber, chum buddies with Fernando Alonso. Is Mark Webber beginning to build a reason for him to go to Ferrari next year?
You know, it's reported quite a bit, but I think it'll be better for him to stay at Red Bull. And, well, as he found out the hard way, they will let them race. So I think he's there. He's a solid driver, has won, you know, races and pole positions against a teammate such as Sebastian Vettel. So and Ferrari can be a very political animal, you know, to go there where there is already a confirmed numero uno. We all know how much Luca Montezemolo loves Nando.
We do know that.
Yeah, and, you know,
that's pure love.
Yes, that's amore, as they say in Milano. And so I think Mark would be better off if it's possible to stay at Red Bull, where he knows that if he can race Sebastian Vettel, nobody's going to stop him. And he's at least assured of winning some races if the car is competitive and it's been pretty reliable. So I think that's a good fit for him. And the team is based in Milton Keynes, not too far from his palatial, you know, Aussie palace.
That's true. Very, very good. Okay, the other team that I think has a big chance of winning, of course, we've talked about it at the beginning of the show. It's not just Schumacher, but Nico. He won his first race already. He came in second in Monaco. He's doing an outstanding job, and the car has pace if everything goes well. Obviously, all the bad karma and bad luck is going on Schumacher. This could be Nico Rosberg's day as well to get that second win.
That would be very impressive. And, you know, last 3 years he has done a very impressive job considering who his teammate is or has been. And, you know, talking of Nico, there has also been reports that if Michael Schumacher retires, which I don't see happening, that maybe Lewis Hamilton will be at McLaren because, you know, Norbert Hogg, you know, knows him very well. They paid for his racing career most of the time in the early years, courtesy of their partnership with McLaren. So Nico Rosberg, tremendous win in China. It was very impressive, very dominating. And it will be very good to see him. If he can be the first double winner this year, that will be even better.
That would be fantastic.
And talking of him, I finally got to see his lovely girlfriend during the telecast last time, because when he first came into Formula One, his papito, Keke Rosberg, would not allow his girlfriend to go to races, which I think was a good idea.
I agree. But still, no, Nico could have a nice weekend, and it could be exciting. And I agree with you. I think Lewis Hamilton, of all the teams that are capable of winning races and getting to the front of the spear, I think Mercedes is a really good fit. Norbert Hogg, Ross Braun, Schumacher retiring. Nico knows Hamilton very, very well from their earlier days and early formulas. That is, I think, the best fit for Lewis Hamilton.
You know, I think the best fit for him would actually be Red Bull, because, you know, Red Bull wants their driver. They don't want their drivers to be PR robots, you know, like with most of the other teams. So I think he would be a very good fit at Red Bull also.
No, I think you're probably right. But still, I see him better teaming up with Nico, because Nico's pretty mellow. And
well, he had Nico's number when they were in karting, so I don't think I don't think it will be a Hamilton-Kovalainen situation. It will be a little bit better than that.
Oh, I believe so, too.
Yeah, but it's not going to be Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso, where both are, like, you know, pretty much top dogs.
Top dogs in a big cage?
Yeah, in a small cage. That's where the problem was. Otherwise, they can go into each respective corners, you know.
I understand.
But I love that kind of cage ride.
I did love it. It was a beautiful moment in our lives. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We've got an outstanding motorsports mondial. We've even got some excitement in Le NASCAR. So there you have it. We'll be back.
Attention, music lovers. There's a website that will take you back to the music of the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Check out coolalbumoftheday.com and relive some favorites. Every day, a new album is posted for your musical pleasure. There's everything from current hits to some off-the-wall titles. You'll find artists ranging from the Sex Pistols to Tom Waits. Something for everybody. So come visit coolalbumoftheday.com. That's coolalbumoftheday.com.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Doesn't Miller Lite taste great? Yeah, but I drink it because it's less filling.
Great taste.
Less filling. Great taste.
Less filling. Great taste.
Less filling.
Great taste.
Greetings and Madison Avenue regards. In motor racing, we have action from Mulsanne to Milwaukee, home of the Hog and Miller Brewing, plus action on two wheels from Silverstone. Tomas Enge has been checked out again for drug use, and we have a Lay goodie bag. You like a goodie bag, right?
Love the goodie bag.
Okay, cool. We shall start with one of the three major races on this universe. You know, that is the Indy 500, Monaco, and the 24 Hours of Le Mans. Business as usual for Audi, this time winning with their hybrid car. And I understand host of F1 Weekly, Mr. Clark Rogers, has some issue with Audi winning.
I did have some issue with Audi winning because, you know, I watched the race. I thought it was very exciting. And in the first 10 hours, there was some fun. Toyota put up a little bit of a fight, but they wandered aimlessly. And Nakajima was a disaster. Those are big mistakes they won't repeat again. But who did Audi beat in the end? They were on the podium, the four cars over the line. And I'm thinking, okay, who did Audi... I mean, without Peugeot there to give them a run for their money, it was really Audi against nobody.
Well, that's what happens in the era of Uber domination by any team.
That was Uber domination, especially when your competition is not there. And it was really... I thought it was awkward, especially to see the jubilation in a team beating nobody.
Well, it's still a lot of hard work. Like,
I know.
And like Damon Hill said, you still have to go out and win it.
And I agree, and I thought it was wonderful, but at least Fisichella brought me the love that I wanted. Bravo, bravo, bravo.
Now, do you feel the same way about the 1992 and 93 Formula One season when one team had an engine which was very dominating? Were you expressing concerns about...
I was expressing concern.
Were you sending slings and arrows to Viry Châtillon?
Yes, I was.
You sure?
I'm positive.
Okay. Winning combo for the second year running included André Lotcher of Germania, Marcel Fassler from Switzerland, and Francais, your homeboy, Benoit Treluier. And Benoit normally races in Nihon, which is also known as Japan. A lap down was the sister car of Alan McNish, Dindo Capello, and the most successful driver at Le Mans, Tom Christensen from Denmark. Now, adding insult to injury for you, third Audi in the top three was entered by... See, this is who they were racing, the third Audi.
They were racing against Audi.
No, this was entered by Audi North America.
Right.
So there was some competition, and this was driven by Oliver Jarvis, Marco Bonanomi, and Mike Rockefeller. And I'm sorry to report, Mr. Rogers, Audi has now won Le Mans 11 times in the past 13 years. That's super impressive. Yeah. You know, some years ago, I was at an American Le Mans event at Laguna Seca, and I met this British journalist who was very much into sports car racing, and he thought Formula One was a joke. But anyway, to each his own. And he did say something interesting about Le Mans. He said Le Mans is a French race for British spectators to be won by German cars. And having gone there, I could not believe how many British and Dutch spectators were there. That was very, very impressive.
Well, there's a lot of camping, and believe it or not, I know you're going to be shocked, but there's a lot of drinking involved at Le Mans. And the British love their drinking.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Shocking, I know.
Exactly. And, you know, I've been thinking about, I would like to go there again and at least check out the race or the spectacle at night also.
Me too.
Maybe we should do that someday.
Yeah, we could buy a little tent.
Yeah.
And we can make a little campsite.
Yeah, and we can take a caseload of PBR and enjoy it at Maison Blanche.
Absolutely.
Are you up for it?
I am up for it.
There you go. Other famous names finished in the following positions. Fourth, Nicolas Prost. Nick Heidfeld. You've heard of Nick Heidfeld, right?
I've heard of him, yeah.
Yeah. Neil Jani. Neil Jani's Papito is from Gujarat, India.
Good for him.
Yeah. Fifth, Marc Genet. Sixth, David Brabham and Karun Chanduk with Peter Dumbrack. And Peter Dumbrack is the gentleman who was part of the Flying Mercedes Circus when Mark Webber also went airborne in a Mercedes at Le Mans some years ago.
And this team, JRM Racing, with
Stepney,
Brabham and Chanduk. Huh?
is Stepney with them.
Nigel Stepney's on the team, and this is a good team. This is their first outing at Le Mans, and they did an outstanding job. So six for them I thought was great, and that's why I
saw him being interviewed during... I watched most of the telecast, which was good, and I saw him being interviewed, and I was shocked that they even asked him a question about now that the F1 thing is behind you. So, you know, we all make mistakes. And
absolutely. No, I was glad to see Nigel back in the limelight, and this is a perfect venue for him to really put his skills to work.
Yeah, and Mike Coughlin has already designed a car that has won a Formula One race, so they are back. What's next? Flavio Briatore replacing Luca Montezemolo?
Anything is possible, NASA.
Yeah, that is very true. Okay, 15th, Alex and Papito, Martin Brundle, and Fisico was 17th in his Ferrari. And he's saying that this, I believe he won his class.
He won his class.
And he's saying this is better than Formula One.
He did say it was better than his three wins in Formula One. You know why? Because Fernando Alonso wasn't there.
That is very true. But this time, you know, there was a sticker on the car. This is a winning car. So that helped the cause.
Correct. But I was happy for Fisico.
Yeah, he's a good guy. The hybrids from Toyota were also very quick. Anthony Davidson had a huge crash after colliding with the Ferrari. Both drivers will race again, but Ant did suffer some back injuries and was taken to hospital. He is now back home in Hemel Hempstead. Okay, turning the page. The other Toyota we already discussed, Kazuki Nakajima doing a hip check and taking out the Delta Wing car, which was pretty sad.
It was pretty sad, and what I didn't like is everybody who was sort of anti-Delta Wing kept saying, well, it's really hard to see the Delta Wing, you know? It's like stealth. You look, and it's not really there. I could see it clearly. And the problem with the Delta Wing, it doesn't have those huge fenders like most of the LMP one and an LMP2 class do. But still, if you can see a Porsche 911, you should be able to see the Delta Wing.
Yeah, and it's a nice... I just think it's way ahead of its time in terms of design.
Sure, but I thought it was great for Le Mans to allow them...
Absolutely.
...to race.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I thought it was a great part of the spectacle. It was American technology, Nissan. I thought it was wonderful.
It's very good. It's built at Dan Gurney's Santa Ana shop, so it's very nice. Okay, Le Mans is also famous for being the birthplace of Grand Prix motor racing, as the first French Grand Prix took place here in 1906. The Wright brothers also took to the friendly skies from Le Mans. Did you know that?
Yep, I did.
That's good.
We call them Les Wright brothers.
Exactly. Other famous sons of the city are these are motorsport sons. You know this guy who was Prime Minister, Mr. Fillon. He's also apparently from Le Mans. But We try not to get into politics. So in motorsports, the other famous sons are Sébastien Bourdais and Mr. Jean Rondeau. Jean Rondeau won the 1980 Le Mans in his own car, and 5 years later, sadly, he was killed while trying to follow a police car at a train crossing and was... I think he was driving a Porsche 911 that day, and he was hit by a train. Sad. Now, your neck of the woods, your favorite place. From Mulsanne to Milwaukee for the Michael Andretti promoted IndyCar race at the oldest racing track still in use anywhere in the world. This, the Milwaukee State Fairgrounds track, is older than Indy track, which is very, very impressive. And it's the oldest motor racing facility still in use anywhere.
Well, that's because it's a fairgrounds track. And that's how American racing started, at the fairgrounds where they raced horses.
Yeah.
Round and round and round.
Yeah, but to survive, you know, two world wars and this and that, it's very impressive. And I'm glad it's back here.
And I love fairgrounds. They always have great hot dogs.
Oh, absolutely, especially in Milwaukee. In days gone by, this race used to be run a week after the Indy 500. One of the previous winners include a Scottish driver in a green car. IndyCar race was run on Saturday, and there was some rain delay, and the winner from Florida, Mr. Ryan Hunter-Reay, who is married to Robbie Gordon's sister, and he drives for Andretti Autosport. So it's a big day for Michael Andretti. Pole sitter Dario Franchitti went into the wall of voodoo after colliding with Ryan Briscoe. Tony Kanaan was second for Jimmy Vassar's team, and James Hinchcliffe, also known as Manica for driving the GoDaddy car, was third, making it an all-Chevy podium. So good for them. Oriol Servia was fourth in a Lotus-powered car, and he would have received a Turkish delight from Denny Bahar, but Denny Boy is now busy trying to sue his previous employer, as reported on one of the racing websites. I think it was on autoracingone.com. Indy Lights support racing.
Wait a minute. What about Rubinho?
I don't have his finishing position. You can tell me. I know you love him.
No, I don't. I'm counting on you, the king.
Yeah, well, if you're not in the top three, you fall off the radar very quickly.
I like it now, sir.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Okay, Indy Lights support race. This was won by your homeboy, Tristan Wautier. He leads the championship at 241 points. Esteban Guerrieri of Argentina is second, 3 points behind. Sebastian Saavedra is third on 227 points. And you know, this is how things turn out in life. I was trying to get some information on some series, and I punched in some names, and some results came up of the F3 Euro series. Could have been, obviously, before when Sebastian Vettel was in this series, and it was very impressive to see Esteban Guerrieri was leading the championship over several well-known names, including Sebastian Vettel. Amazing how destiny goes in different directions. Naughty in Navarra. Last month, there was an FIA GT1 race in Navarra, Spain, and one of the Lambo drivers is now in limbo, just as he was after winning the 2002 Formula 3000 championship. Ladies and gentlemen, please check out the life in the fast lane for ex-F1 driver Tomas Enge. He tested positive for a banned substance after the race in Navarra. But there are both sides to the story, and we must report both sides. And he is quoted on autosport.com saying, I quote, I suffer from long-term health problems and recently asked the FIA for an exemption so that I can take medicines that are on the banned substances list. Now I will consult with experts to find out how this situation occurred. End of quote. And I hope he gets a clean bill of health and keeps his nose clean.
Okay, so it wasn't marijuana or cocaine?
I don't know, man. I mean, I don't know.
Okay. But just checking.
Yeah, yeah. You never know. But, you know, he won the 2002 F3 championship. And then he failed a drug test after the race in Hungary. And then he was disqualified.
Yeah, so this is not a new problem for Enge.
Yeah, but, you know, let's hope he puts his life on the right track.
Absolutely. We support everyone.
Sure. Okay, some Formula One news. Hang 'em high in Texas. Ticket sales for the GP in November are sizzling like a Texas barbecue. Track owners are now thinking of adding more grandstands to meet the demand. And I just hope this is not a PR stunt. But looks like things are going very good, and ticket sales are, you know, good.
Well, we expect the ticket sales to be really, really good. With Sergio Perez, we've got a big, huge South American contingent coming up. A lot of Canadians are going to go to this because it's just over the border.
Should have Montoya drive the pace car. And
I think
bring
that's
another.
A good idea.
Yeah,
but he would crash.
Yeah, yeah, and you don't want a rocket fuel truck in Texas.
Exactly. Could you imagine? Maybe we could get David Coulthard.
There you go.
Oh no, he'll crash.
Yeah, I know.
Danica.
Oh yeah, she might win the race
in a nice little outfit.
There you go.
And it could be a glass see-through car.
Whew.
Man, I'm thinking.
You are. Okay, looking ahead to Sunday's race in Valencia, the track is 5.4 kilometers in length. It has the highest number, this was a surprise to me, it has the highest number of corners of any circuit on the calendar, 25. 11 are right-handers and 14 are on the NASCAR program. Turning left. The first GP here was in August 2008. Felipe Massa celebrated his 100th F1 start with victory from pole position. The following year, Rubens Barrichello won the race in a Brawn to give Brazil a century of wins in Formula Uno. So pretty impressive there. The race also saw the first F1 start. This would be in 2009 for Romain Grosjean with Renault as teammate to Nando. Senor Sebastian Vettel has been the winner in Valencia the past 2 years. And let's see if he can go 3 in a row. Now we come to your favorite series.
Le NASCAR.
Well, this was a great day. The 4-year wait is over. Junior Nation has declared a week of celebration after Dale Earnhardt Jr. wins the cup race in Brooklyn, Michigan, a mighty fine and very fast oval. And this track was once owned by Roger Penske before he sold all his tracks to the, I think it's called International Speedway Corporation, owned by the France family.
We're still sweeping up the confetti in the Palatial Studios.
Yes, that is true. Tony Stewart was second, Matt Kenseth was third, and your favorite Mr. Rogers, Greg Biffle, was fourth. Monty was eighth, Marcus Ambrose ninth, and Kurt Busch, back after a one-race suspension, was 30th. And I saw a news item, just a headline, I did not go into details late today, that apparently Kurt Busch has run into another, some sort of a issue with some female reporter. So I don't know what's going on. Him and Tomas Enge need to go to Tahiti and take out their frustrations there and come back. Finally, some sad news to report. 24-year-old co-driver Gareth Roberts from the UK was killed during the IRC Targa Florio rally in Sicily. Craig Breen, driver of the Peugeot 207, was not hurt. The accident was very similar to the accident of Robert Kubica last year, where the guardrail penetrated the driver/passenger compartment and very bad. Okay, sir, I know you like a good goodie bag and a good Godiva. Shall we commence with the goodie bag? Today it's called Le Goodie Bag.
Indubitably, let's begin.
Thank you, sir. Look at some key moments in the history of Le Mans 24 Hours race. And of course, because of time consideration, we can only do a few items. Ladies and gentlemen, madame, monsieur, the first Le Mans race took place in 1923. Total Francais domination with André Lagache and René Lenard winning in a Chenard and Walker on Michelin.
So that was those were the days. And what's really ironic is I have some French magazines from 1923, believe it or not. It's called L'Illustration. And it's unbelievable. The ads for Chenard Walker are just stupendous. But people forget, 1923 was our year. Damn it.
Cool. Okay, 1932 winners in an Alfa Romeo HC, another famous car, were Raymond Sommer, a very famous French driver, and Italian Luigi Canetti, a friend of Enzo, who later became Ferrari importer in Stati Uniti, which is also known as United States. Sommer would win again in 1933 with an Italian co-driver. This time it was Tazio Nuvolari, the Flying Mantuan. 1951, appearance of Michelin radial tires on Lancia Aurelia. 1953, winning debut for disc brakes on Jaguar C-Type. First win for the Cat in the French countryside. 1955, the tragic race where over 80 people were killed, including Mercedes driver Pierre Levet, was won by the Jaguar of Mike Hawthorn, who would go on to become the first British F1 world champion 3 years later, and his co-driver was Ivor Boeb. Yeah, a pretty well-known name in the British motor racing circles. 1959, winners were Carroll Shelby and Roy Salvadori in an Aston Martin. Both these gentlemen passed away recently within weeks of each other.
And I believe they had the car on display last weekend at Le Mans.
1962, two in a row for Phil Hill from Santa Monica, California. He also won in 1958. Each time his teammate was Belgian driver Olivier Jean-Debien. All three wins for Hill and four for Jean-Debien came in Ferrari cars. 1963, seeing is believing. Halogen headlamp seen for the first time on Porsche and Ford cars. The race was won by the Ferrari of two Italians, Ludovico Scarfiotti and Lorenzo Bandini. Both scored only one F1 victory and both were killed in racing accidents. Scarfiotti won at Monza in 1966, which to this day is the last Italian Grand Prix won by an Italian driver. And of course, he was in a Ferrari. And he was killed in a German hill climb in 1968. Bandini won the inaugural Austrian Grand Prix at the Selzweg airfield circuit in 1964, also in a Ferrari. 1965, final victory for Ferrari at Le Mans, Jochen Rindt from Graz, Austria, and Maston Gregory from Kansas, I believe he was from Topeka, Kansas, were the winners. The winning car is at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum, and we have seen that car.
We have.
1966, Bruce McLaren and Chris Amon won the first of four in a row for Ford Motor Company. The winning car was entered by Shelby American team. They also won the race in 1967, with Texas tough A.J. Foyt and California cool Dan Gurney at the wheel. 1991, very historic victory for rotary engine and Mazda, the only Japanese success so far at Le Mans. And 2006, your favorite company showed up with a diesel-powered engine and won the race, Audi, and they are winning and winning and winning.
There's no competition.
But there is competition coming from Toyota next year, and also Porsche is coming back, which is one of their divisions all owned by the VW.
Exactly. So I am looking forward to that because I was a little bit disappointed, and I always get the willies when I hear the German national anthem in France.
You get hop in your Jeep?
No. I hop in my traction avant.
Okay.
I
make joke.
Yeah. Stinko. Anyway, yes. Thanks for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. We've got to love it.
And Nasser? Please don't forget the interview this weekend with Mr. Leo Hendry, the boss man of the Grand Prix coming to the Big Apple.
Exactly. That's going to be podcast number 585.
Start spreading the news.
Thank you, Nasser. So anyway, let's go ahead and just wrap it up by saying, if you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, just email me at info@f1weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who listens to the program. Good night.
Good night.